Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I am Kate Spencer.
And I am Dori Shafrir.
And we are not experts.
We're just two friends who like to talk a lot about serums. Kate is raising her hand in victory.
I'm like fist pumping.
I know.
The air. I'm happy to be back to the pod.
Same. I haven't seen you in a long time, like 2 whole weeks.
It is weird if we do not see each other within 48 hours
it's
at this point.
Very
with this podcast.
Strange. Sammy, did you miss us?
A lot, yeah.
Okay. Oh, Sammy, we missed you too.
I missed you.
Well, it feels great to be back.
It does.
I went to a wedding on the East Coast and then.
How was that?
You know what? It was lovely. My cousin got married, one of my younger cousins. Oh. So the whole time I was, you know, that feeling of like, wow. I'm old.
Totally.
Like, my cousin is a married person.
Right.
My 27-year-old
like
cousin.
My baby cousin.
Yeah, like the kid that I held when I was 11 years old. Is that right? I know I'm significantly older than him. So that was really exciting and it was really fun. And I got to see all my family members and my brother and my kids had a blast. And I ate a lot of oysters because it was on Cape Cod and I don't normally eat oysters, but these were delicious.
Mm. And you got to do like New England summer things.
Yes. And that was really special to share that with my children because that's where I grew up. And then we went to New Hampshire and visited, you know, we get like 1 week a year to have kind of quality time with my family. I have a lot of aunts and uncles and they're all really special to my kids. And so they had a lot of like quality time activities.
Aww.
They were sad to be back in California. We flew back yesterday from New Hampshire. Well, from Boston after driving down from New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it was really nice. And I got to spend, you know, I like getting to connect with my family.
Yeah.
And that was really special for me. And normally when I go back to New Hampshire, it's where my mom is buried. I went and saw my mom. I had visited all her the other people in the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of made my rounds and like talked to other dead people. I had a moment there. But I visited my mom's grave and my grandparents, and I always get a little like depressed when I'm there because it so reminds me of her. But this time was actually kind of very peaceful.
Oh, good.
And that was a nice change. But I'm happy to be back in California.
Yeah, this is your home.
I kind of had this feeling as I was like flying across America.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I love the East Coast so much, but I feel very comfortable in California.
Yeah. Well, you've really made a home for yourself.
You know, I made myself a matcha latte in a blender. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I'm fully committed to living here now. Anyway, you were also traveling, Dori.
I was traveling. My sister, who has been on this podcast,
Karen
Vladek, she had her baby.
Yay.
Yay.
And it's adorable.
She is so cute. Her name is Sydney. By the time you guys hear this, she will be about 2.5 weeks old.
Okay.
She's a little tiny baby.
Oh, man. They're so small
they're
when they
so
come
small.
Out.
I know.
Although it's a big thing to have inside you.
Yes.
Like it's they're both very tiny and very huge.
Yes. And, you know, because I haven't had one, I guess I haven't been around that many like newborns.
They're real little and that belly button scab is real weird.
Little. Yeah.
There's like stuff you didn't know. Like the belly button scab thing is super weird. And I didn't know about it until I had one.
Totally. And I mean, she's like a little baby bird.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're you know, always going for the boob.
Gotta eat, pecking around.
Gotta eat. Always with their mouth open, you know. So that was nice to be able to meet her and spend some time with my other niece, my sister's other daughter, who is a real firecracker.
Literally.
She's that adorable. Bright red hair.
Yeah, she is a cutie.
And I also have two friends, two couples I know who just moved to Austin.
Oh.
So I got to see both of them, which was nice.
You packed in a lot over 3 days.
I did. I mean, it ended up being about 4 days.
Okay.
Because it was 3 nights. But Austin was hot as F.
Did you go float in one of their famous lakes, rivers? What do they have down there?
They have springs that are always 68 degrees.
That sounds great.
Yeah. I think, you know, my sister wasn't super mobile.
Yeah, and you can be like, excuse me, I'm off to the springs.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I probably could have, but like... I don't know. That felt weird.
That wasn't why you were
there.
That
wasn't why I was there. I did go to my niece's swim lesson, which was adorable. But yeah, it was nice. But I also had that feeling of like, okay, like I'm ready to be home.
It's always nice to come home.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just something comforting about it. I don't know if that's getting older or what, but I'm just like, yes.
Yeah. Well, it is that sort of like nesting impulse. Mm-hmm. And also, like, I mean, you and I have talked about this, but getting back into your routine, like you're thrown out of your routine. And even when I'm away for just a couple days, like I try to have a routine.
Yeah.
Even if I'm just gone for a couple days, but like you can't really get into a routine and you're out of your element. And I was in an Airbnb and like I didn't, you know, things didn't work the way I wanted them to. You know, it's just like
relinquishing that control.
It's just like, okay. All right. I'll just, you know, I have to have all the doors closed in the bedroom.
Oh, interesting.
And the way the apartment was set up, like the door to the kitchen, it was like living room, bedroom, kitchen. It was a little weird. And then the door from the bedroom to the kitchen, like wouldn't stay closed. So I had to improvise.
Okay.
So yeah, it's like little things like that.
I know the feeling. Yeah. I found this time when I was traveling, I was much better about being like, I'm on vacation. Like everything is different and being okay with it. And I felt really good. I normally have a kind of a control panic attack issue when I'm thrown out of my routines.
Well, that was one of your intentions.
Yeah. And I think I followed through. I was able to just kind of like be in the moment.
I love that.
I didn't Instagram at all either. I observed on Instagram, but I didn't do any stories or anything. I just was kind of trying to like take the performative element of vacation out of it.
And live in the moment.
Yeah. And it was really nice.
That's so nice. Do your kids, like, are they kind of aware of social media?
They're getting more aware of it. Like my daughter did ask to look at something. She's like, can I see that go on the place where you post the pictures? Like, and I think she was talking about Facebook.
Uh-huh.
I think they are more aware that there's ways to access information and like access people.
Yeah.
I don't know if they totally understand what it is.
Right.
But I think it's just going to be a part of their world. Like whenever they have a question, we're just like, we can look that up on our phones or we can try to find it on YouTube. Like these words and these practices are just kind of now part of who they are.
Yeah.
The same way, I guess, like Nickelodeon and MTV and answering machines were our childhood.
Totally.
So it is interesting. But they don't watch YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing that's like basically the only strict thing I've done.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do YouTube yet.
My 2.5-year-old niece has started saying no pictures.
I'm sorry, I was mid gulp. Like she know, like she's a famous person.
It's like she's a famous person, and my sister is paparazzi.
My kids get that way, and they'll see if I'm taking a video of them, and they'll ask me to stop.
Mm.
Like they are very hip to what you're doing with your phone if you're kind of spying on them with the phone, and they don't like it.
Yeah, No, it's so interesting. And also, like, where did she even get that phrase from?
Yeah.
And how did she know to say that? And
we're such a different culture than we were when we were children. Just the way we're always photographing and taking videos and stuff. It's totally different. And then also watching.
Totally.
You know, like if my friend posts a picture of their kid and it's a kid my kids know, I'm like, come look at so-and-so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's weird.
Well, and also, I don't know. Sorry. I'm like, oh my God, kids and technology. But like, it is kind of crazy. Like my 2.5-year-old niece sometimes we'll FaceTime with my sister's, one of my sister's best friends has a son who's exactly my niece's age. And this weekend she picked up her dad's phone and she was like, Maddie, send message to Asher.
Yeah.
Like she somehow knew about texting.
Oh yeah, they know.
Like, it
my 7-year-old now will text people via my phone. Like if she wanted to, she does two things. Like one, she texted my stepmom, her grandmother, a question because she left her necklace at their house and she wanted to be the one to write the message. And then the other thing she does is her best friend, I will ask her best friend's mom, like, can Eleanor send a text to your daughter? And they like will write each other. It's mostly like they just want to send emojis to each other.
Totally.
But they still, like, it's already starting.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm a bad mom and I shouldn't let her do it, but she loves to type out messages.
No, I don't think you're a bad mom.
I mean, I don't think I am either. I made a big leap there, but
yeah.
Also, they can't help it. They see me texting all the time, or right. I'm just like, if they have a question, I'm like, oh, I'll text so-and-so to see if they can come over.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're all fucked. Technology is destroyed.
In conclusion,
we're doomed.
We are effed.
I mean, my other daughter on the plane yesterday, I was working on my computer and she just was sitting next to me and then just kept trying to move the screen on my computer with her finger. Like they don't understand when screens aren't touch screens.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I barely do.
Honestly, I kind of understand what she's got.
Let's
she's
be honest.
With. No, it's happening. In 5 years, all our screens are going to be touchscreens,
for
right?
Sure.
Yeah.
And another, sorry to totally sort of change subjects,
change
but
it.
I just wanted to say another one of our former guests also just had a baby.
Emily Gould.
Emily Gould.
Had a baby girl?
A baby boy.
A baby boy.
Mm-hmm.
What's his, does he have a name?
I don't think he has a name yet.
Okay.
He was just born, like 2 days ago.
That's so exciting. So,
yeah, so congratulations to Karen and Emily. And we are going to take a quick break.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I like to care for my skin, duh. And it's also something that I do love to kind of like get into the research on.
You do have a curious mind.
Look, I have a curious mind. I can't help it.
You do.
But today's sponsor, OneSkin, has made that easy because they do their own fantastic research for their products. In fact, their products are scientifically validated to improve your skin's health while targeting the root cause of aging. The secret is OneSkin's proprietary OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient proven to switch off the aging cells that cause lines, wrinkles, and thinning skin, and they've got several studies to back it up. They also have an amazing new sunscreen.
Ooh, our favorite.
Our fave. It's the OS1 Shield Protect and Repair SPF 30 Plus. It's got the peptide. It's a mineral sunscreen. It's got antioxidants. It comes in tinted and untinted. I mean, like, what can't this thing do? I'm just saying. I love it. It's so easy to use, and I love that it's just like, and it feels so nice going on. But don't take my word. Nice. Don't take my word for it. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews and was recently recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands of 2024. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code FOREVER at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code FOREVER. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support your show and tell them we sent you. So, Kate, we talked a bit last week about friendship and loneliness and mostly how I was feeling sorry for myself for not having.
No, friends. You were feeling like a deep sense of isolation,
yes,
and loneliness, and that's a very real experience, which we found out because so many people contacted us,
yeah,
about it.
So we heard from so many people that we wanted to talk about this a little bit more this week, and you know, we usually read emails from listeners and listen to voicemails on our mini episodes, but because we wanted to talk about this more on a full-length episode, we're going to do that here today. And, you know, I have to say, being in my situation can feel very isolating, and it was really nice to just hear from people who are going through the same thing. And it was also, like, maybe this sounds weird, but it was kind of nice to know that, like, people who aren't in my exact situation also feel isolated. Like, it is not a unique situation. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. You and I kept talking about it a little bit, and there were so many, I mean, I don't want to say years, but very long stretches of time, especially after having kids. And I actually still feel this way, where I felt so deeply alone.
Yeah.
And so we heard from listeners with kids, without mm-hmm. kids. I mean, not that those are the only two categories of person, but a lot of people who for various reasons felt some very serious loneliness,
yeah,
in their lives. So should we kind of read some of these?
Yeah. And I should also say, just before we start, yeah, there was a really good, thoughtful discussion in the Facebook group, yeah, about this as well. So,
and I think what's interesting to me about it is that so many things can trigger it, mm-hmm, whether it's a different job, a relationship change, moving, having kids, not having kids, yep, getting older. I mean, just there's, yep, just so many, I think, experiences. I mean, I also know, like, after my mom died, I felt very different. I felt very, mm-hmm, very lonely, because most people I know hadn't been through that when, right, I was 27.
Right.
And it was extremely lonely.
Yeah.
And then again, when I had my first and then my second kid, or moving. Oh, man. You know what? Loneliness.
Yeah, it just really, it's a real punch to the gut.
Yeah, and learning to sit with it.
And learning to sit with it is really hard. And admitting it, it makes you feel really vulnerable.
Totally. Because there's a feeling of that you've done something wrong.
Or that you're, like, thirsty or desperate. And I think those are terms that often get put on women.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, I don't think there's anything thirsty or desperate about just wanting human connection.
No, I think it's very natural. Here's our first email. Should,
yeah,
we start with this one?
It's from another Kate.
Hey, Dory. I can't imagine I'm the only one who will send you a similar message, but man, I have 2 kids, 7 and 4, and still feel like I haven't found my tribe. I'm so sorry you've been feeling lonely and sort of outside. I know exactly how it feels, and it feels shitty. I love my kids, and I love to spend time with them and talk about them, but I also would like to have adult human friends, with or without kids, to spend time with. Anyway, I'm also feeling stuck in some loneliness today. And some real dread about the general state of the world on top of it. So I wanted to reach out and say, hey, you're not alone. I don't have a solution for us, but here are some words on a screen from a stranger on the internet that may or may not help you feel a little bit better for a second.
It did make me feel a little bit better for a second.
The kids divide is really, really freaking hard.
Yeah.
I felt the awful feeling, especially after having my first daughter and then moving out to Los Angeles with a kid and having a second kid, of this like awful feeling of having to make mom friends.
Mm-hmm.
But all you have in common with these people you connect with is that you have a kid, which
right.
is not that much.
Right.
And then beyond that, it's like, how do I make you my, like, how do I find people I connect with now? And also just the feeling that you're supposed to go out and make quote unquote mom friends after right. your kids. It's kind of
and
bullshit,
the same but. Pressure doesn't exist for dads.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
It was not like my husband was going to a weekly dad meetup with right. with our kid. Yeah. It's so freaking weird. And that was really a lonely time. And then another thing I still feel like deep, deep sorrow about is that a lot of my relationships have changed since I had kids. And yeah. I feel a lot of like guilt and responsibility for that, that I've kind of let some relationships go just honestly, because I lost the time to yeah. invest in them. And I feel like shame and guilt about that and like really deep sadness. And there are people who I like really miss and I like don't know how to reconnect with them. I'm like embarrassed that I kind of let it, that happen.
Do you feel like you could just be honest?
Yes, I do. And that, and that's totally worked. I've never had anyone be like, fuck you.
Right.
But it's just a, sometimes it's easier to kind of hide and be embarrassed than it is to like send
yeah,
the first outreach email or whatnot. But it is really hard, I think, to maintain relationships sometimes after you've had children.
Yeah.
I think having kids also, one thing that we don't often, or we talk about it, but it can be very traumatizing
mm-hmm.
and really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And what we see is like everybody just like loving it and everything's
right.
so easy and we're
totally.
All just like laying in a field breastfeeding and like actually your body's been ravaged, you're exhausted, you don't know what you're doing, you might be suffering from postpartum depression or postpartum anxiety or regular or old depression or anxiety
yeah.
and it can be very harrowing and just so like grind you to the bone that it can be hard to maintain relationships. And then when you come out of it, you're like, oh shoot.
Mm-hmm. Like, where did everyone go?
Yeah. And it's just hard. Anyway, not to make this now all about me, but I just, after we had that initial conversation, I just thought so much about like, there were some moments where it was just so fucking lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And still is.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I saw you today and I was like, oh, I haven't talked to humans who aren't my family in a long time. should we read this next email?
Yes. This is from Brenda. Dory, your chat about the awkwardness that comes when you're around families with children without children of your own had me nodding like a bobblehead doll. My husband has 2 children. We have no children together. It has taken me 5 years, but I found a handful of friends who like to get together and not wax poetic about the nature of their child's poop. You know what I'm talking about.
I
have
do.
One friend who likes to exercise with a partner, so we get together a few times a month to walk or jog at a nearby park. I have other friends who like to do a girls' night out. The great thing is I don't have to be the one who begs to be home by 10 because we're all tired. Hello, adulting. I'm just going to, this is Dory commenting right now. I loved this conclusion to her email. I'm just going to preface this by saying
Okay.
My mom always says that you can't make other people's choices for them. Is Sunday considered family time? Sure, but it might also be the perfect time for dad to take the kids for a few hours so mom can do something for herself. Give your friends the benefit of the doubt and extend an invite. I was like, oh my God.
Oh, Dory. So what this listener is saying is like, you should host the brunch.
Well, I think what she's saying is like, don't just assume that weekends are off limits.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like, extend the invitation and see what happens.
I love that. So I just
really like that. And I think that also goes for people with kids. Like, don't necessarily assume that your childless friends, like, don't want to come to your child's birthday party.
Oh, that's a big lesson. Yes, totally.
You know,
your friends want to also be involved. That's the other thing is assuming. I've made that mistake where I'm like, oh, now that I have a kid, they don't want to come to this thing. They might
want to come. Yeah. And if they don't want to come, they won't come.
Yeah. Extend the invitation.
Big,
I love it.
Big tent.
I love that.
And then as I mentioned before, the comment thread on Facebook I thought was really powerful. And so I asked Liz if we could read one of her comments on the podcast, and she said yes.
Liz wrote, "Just another comment echoing others above, that as a mom, I feel the same way. It's not logistically possible to join the events of my kid-free friends, and the mom groups around me feel superficial and unable to deeply connect within. Interesting that we all want more connection and all feel barriers, regardless of our life and family details."
I just thought that was like, that really made me think like, oh yeah, it's not just, like I was kind of saying before, a lot of people just want more connection.
Yeah.
No matter what their situation is. So I don't know. I guess this all boils down to like, everyone should have more empathy.
Yes. And I think also just reaching out.
And reaching out.
And being honest is a very good place to start.
Yeah. You know, it was funny last week, a friend who I don't think listens to the podcast, who I have seen maybe like 3 times since she had kids, which was, I think she had her first kid like almost 3 years ago, two or three years ago, reached out like out of the blue.
Oh, that's so awesome.
And was like, hey, I've been thinking about you, like haven't seen you in a long time, like would love to get together. And we're going to go to Broadway dance class on Thursday night.
Oh, that's such a perfect activity.
Yeah.
I love, I've been saying I love that so much in just this one episode alone, but I think that's awesome.
Yeah. And then randomly another woman who listens to my other podcast, who also has 2 kids, who's like another person who I'm like, oh, she's probably just like busy with her kids, reached out and was like, do you want to get drinks on Friday? Like, I heard your podcast. Like, I know you're going through like a rough time.
Oh, are you going to have drinks?
Yeah.
Awesome.
And I was like, oh.
I will say,
people are nice.
Come on the other side, as a person with kids, I do think sometimes people are like, oh, they won't be able to do that.
Yeah.
And oftentimes I have been the person who's like had to say no to things over and over and over again. And people have been very good about inviting me. But I do think like parents want to go out. They want to like to live a life that is not connected to their kids in any way.
Right.
And they will try to find a, like, you know, it's hard and babysitters are expensive and childcare is very much a big pain in the ass and a challenge for my husband and I, cause we don't live near family. But I do think speaking as a person with kids, like we still want to go out.
Yeah.
We still want to,
I think it's like, I
do things that aren't kid related.
Right. I feel like I have often extended invitations to people with kids, and after getting turned down
so many times,
you're sort of like, I'm just going to ask someone else.
Yeah. I mean, that's hard because then that totally happens.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you, but
no, I mean, kind of like how we never had dinner together.
I know, we still have to have dinner.
with our husbands.
Dory and I have had
dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't think there's like one size fits all answer here, but I think probably just everyone should be more, should be better about reaching out, I guess. Right. Wait, isn't that the answer?
I don't know if it's the answer, but it's a suggestion.
It's a suggestion.
We have a voicemail. Should we play that?
Oh,
as
yeah.
Well?
I'd love to hear it.
Okay.
Hey, Kate and Dory. I was just listening. My name is Rachel. I was just listening to your, current episode about, and Dory was talking about feeling lonely and not, sometimes having access to friends who have kids. And I definitely feel that. And also I live in LA, and some of my best friends live in Seattle. My sister has a boyfriend who she spends time with. I'm super happy about that. But my mom passed away late last year, and I took care of her really intensively, my sister and I, for about 5 years while she was sick. And that was like my whole life, going to work and taking care of mom. And I didn't really do a lot of other things with friends. Not that the relationships have like fallen apart, but I'm just now, I have all this time and I'm like, what do? And who do I talk to? And, you know, like, it's such a weird feeling. So I'm also, I've been trying to work on, in my time when I'm not working, on feeling okay being alone and living alone, which is kind of depressing sounding, but also, like, just my reality. So one of the things I've been doing is I have every other Friday off, and I realize I've always lived in the Valley when I haven't been away at school in the San Fernando Valley, and I've worked a lot of different places. Mostly I just, you know, go home and go to work, and I don't actually know LA very well, the different neighborhoods. So I've been exploring new neighborhoods and making lists of places I want to check out. I was just in Silver Lake like 2 weeks ago, and hitting up bookstores in different neighborhoods, checking out local coffee shops, and kind of meeting people, seeing new places, and then spending time with myself, like eating lunch alone and just exploring and having kind of quiet time. So, yeah, maybe a day by yourself, a day of adventuring and sort of thinking through things and being okay being alone sometimes. Anyways, much love to you both, and thanks for the podcast. Bye.
I love that.
We need to get t-shirts with "I love that" written on them. Because we love things.
I love
deeply.
So many things.
I also love that caller.
Yeah.
And that sentiment, and how powerful that you're 5 months out of your mom passing away and you're taking such action.
Mm-hmm.
Because that can be very hard, having been a caregiver in a similar situation, but not nearly as long, when all of a sudden all that responsibility is gone.
Yeah.
And you're grieving.
Yeah.
It can just throw, you know, it's, you have all this downtime, mm-hmm. and all slash grief, and it can be really, really, really hard.
Right. And your emotional energy is kind of shifted.
Yeah.
From caretaking to grieving, and it sounds tough.
It does sound tough, but I think you offer such good advice, which is like getting comfortable with your loneliness is also a big part of it, right?
Yeah.
And being with it and finding like the positive in it.
I love the idea of exploring different neighborhoods.
I do too.
That's such a cute idea.
Yeah. And that's a really great way to like take yourself out on a date and
yeah.
see new things and have new experiences that you're just sharing with yourself. Thank you for that call.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. We're going to take another quick break. Our guest today is Rachel Wilkerson Miller. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, hello.
Rachel is a senior lifestyle editor at BuzzFeed and the author of Dot Journaling, A Practical Guide, How to Start and Keep the Planner, To-Do List, and Diary That'll Actually Help You Get Your Life Together. And I have to say, she is probably one of our most requested Forever 35 guests.
Very true.
So we are thrilled
that
to
is
have
such
you.
An honor.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm yeah. so excited to be on.
Well, by the end of this conversation, we are going to be fully organized. Our lives are going to be simpler.
We're going to have a dress code.
We're going to have a dress code. The journal that's in my bag is going to be beautiful.
Yeah.
That's going to save my life.
I can't wait.
You guys, this is a lot of pressure.
Sorry, Rachel. Oh, we'll take it down a notch.
Did we say that out loud?
No, we're just really happy to have you. And I feel like we should say when we were, you know, when I was getting ready for the episode and going through all of your blog and your BuzzFeed articles, it was like really hard to narrow down exactly what we wanted to talk to you about because you've done so much amazing stuff. So that's kind of the nature of our enthusiasm, I would say.
Amazing. Thank you so much. That feels so good to hear. And I'm so excited to talk about all of these topics with you. Like, I feel like you guys totally get like what I'm about. So I'm just so pumped.
So I guess I'd love to start with an article you recently wrote for BuzzFeed that someone independently posted to the Forever 35 Facebook group. So I know that there is a lot of interest in this topic. And it was about how you figured out your dress code. And what I love about this is you open the article by saying, it's not quite a uniform, and it's also not a capsule wardrobe. And you also said, I don't give a fuck about creating new, different, or interesting looks, and that you stick to a very small color palette and specific silhouettes. And this article, we will link to it in the show notes, but it's great. And Rachel has a ton of photos of all her looks and all the clothes that she's bought for all of these looks. But I'd love to just hear about how you kind of came to this, why you decided to have a dress code, and how you feel now.
Yeah, I would be happy to share. So basically it happened in two parts. First, it was that I had a ton of like dumb credit card debt. Like I had like a Victoria's Secret card and an Express card that had like, you know, $2,000 on each, which is sort of ridiculous, right? Like, and it was all just like dumb fast fashion from college that I was paying all this interest on. And so I reached a point in my 20s where I decided to like get it together and stop using them and pay them down. And so in an effort to like stop using them and to stop using my regular credit card, I realized like, oh, you have to change your relationship with clothes. Like you can't just go buy a new shirt every weekend that you like then don't wear again, or, you know, like you can't buy stuff you don't really care about anymore, which is so much of what I did for years. So it really forced me to like, before I made a purchase, I wanted to be really sure that I really liked it and was going to wear it a ton and just like get the most out of it, because it was kind of like, okay, you can buy that, but you're going to be wearing it for the next like 6 months, maybe longer, because you're not buying stuff constantly.
Right.
So that was a really helpful way to start to like train my brain. And it kind of grew out of necessity. And it, like, I'm not a minimalist, not really, but I sort of became one out of practicality. And I still don't really think of myself as a minimalist, but this was how I sort of got into it. And what really helped was that I had interned way back in the day in college at Elle Magazine. And what I realized when I was working there was that everybody there wore really nice, beautiful, expensive clothes, but they didn't have that many. Like if they bought, you know, Balenciaga sandals, they wore them every single day for like an entire season. So that like got me in the mindset of like, oh, this is what it means to sort of invest in things. And like, it's okay to keep wearing them all the time. Like if you really love them, it just really made me think about things differently. So those two things kind of came together where like, yeah, I wasn't buying, you know, $800 sandals, but I kind of felt like the idea could be the same, that if I really loved the shoes or the jeans or whatever, I could just keep wearing them all the time and that would be fine. So that was like the big first step. And then I moved. So this was when I was living in Texas, and then I moved to New York. I got the job at BuzzFeed, and I had to buy clothes because I had been living in Texas, working from home. It was a completely different climate. So I had to like every few weeks I would be like, kind of like, oh, I don't actually like have enough sweaters for this.
Right.
So as I started shopping, I realized that I was like consistently drawn to like the sort of the same type of things, like, you know, the same colors and shapes. And even sometimes I would buy something and I was kind of like, I just like love this so much, I want to buy another one. I just want to wear this all the time versus like trying to find something different. And I just was like, you know what, I'm just going to do that. Like, that's fine to do. Like, there's no reason I can't wear the same gray sweater or like the same style of gray sweater, but like two different versions of it the same week. Like, I can wear it on Monday and I can like wear it again Wednesday or Thursday, and that's fine. And I'm just going to do it. And so I just sort of did it and didn't really ask anyone for permission or like get any feedback. And I just, it just happened. And then it became like over a little bit of time, it really like narrowed down to becoming this sort of like within BuzzFeed, like this became my brand. Like I was known for like always wearing white jeans, which isn't like what I set out to do because my style isn't like, I don't have a lot of style, especially in New York City where everyone is really stylish and like always looks great. But I was like, well, I'm going to like always look the same and hope that that if I'm like right, that these clothes like fit me well and I feel good in them, then I will like always sort of like, and I'm finger quoting here, like look great because I like feel great in these clothes. So maybe I can kind of trick everyone into thinking I like have style, which sort of actually worked in a way.
Which is something that I feel like men have done forever. Like yes, men wear the same thing every single day. No one ever says anything.
They don't even notice. They just like don't care. They're just like, oh yeah, like the guy in the jeans and the gray sweater. Like you wouldn't really think about it. You're just like, oh, like plaid shirts. Like I don't know if they're the same one or different. And so I was just kind of like, I was like, I'm going to brute force go ahead with this and try it and do the same thing. And like, I think it'll be fine. And also it would help that like BuzzFeed is really great. Like everybody who works here is really cool and reasonable and chill. And it just seemed like if you're going to try this anywhere, this is the right environment to try it in because people are pretty non-judgmental and open to whatever. So it felt like the right way to like build my confidence in around this idea.
I think you also raise a really important mantra that I want to kind of remember, that if you feel great, you look great, regardless of if you are in like, you know, if you like to wear rainbow colored ball gowns or if you like to wear like a utilitarian all black everything, you know, there's however it makes you feel, I think starts to reflect on the outside.
Totally.
That's my hope.
Yeah. And I think that like that idea that like how you feel matters is like so cliche that I think sometimes we like don't believe it, but it actually is true. Like when you feel good, people can tell that you feel comfortable in your own skin. There's no sort of like pretense. Like you can just, you can tell when somebody's like clothes are wearing them versus when they're wearing their clothes, right? And I didn't want to be in a position where like my clothes were wearing me, and that doesn't happen anymore. And I think that shows where you just have this sort of like ease with yourself that like really helps you carry yourself through the world. And I mentioned this in the article, but like when you live in New York, you gotta find, you gotta take ease where you can find it. Like it's a hard city to live in, even if you feel great in your outfit. So like I try to do everything I can to feel good every day, and like feeling good about my clothes is probably one of the biggest things you can do, right? Like if you hate your outfit, it's hard to have a good day. You know, like you're so aware of yourself and are people looking at me, and like you're pulling at your clothes and tugging, and you just, you think I must feel, or I must look as terrible as I feel. Like that feeling is so awful. And I just like don't want to have that anymore. So I try to buy things that I'm going to feel really good in. And so when I find something that I love, I immediately buy a second one because I'm just like, well, what if something happens to it? Like, got to have a backup. And so over time, it just develops into me just having like sort of a very few looks. But I love all of them, and that's all I wear.
You also mention like your price point is very reasonable, and I feel like that's part of the experience for you, is that you're not spending a ton of money, and if you were, that might not make you feel easeful in your clothes.
Yeah, totally. And I think, because I think when you, when we talk about minimalism, we talk about this concept of like have a few things but love them, there's always this moment, because it's going to be in like, you know, a magazine article where it's like, so you know, you can buy the $300 skirt because you're only buying one a season. And I'm just like, I am not gonna buy a $300 skirt at this point in my life. Like I'm just still not there, and it doesn't really make sense for me to, because I can find the clothes that I like at like a cheaper price point. So I don't know. I think there's a second part of this, which is sort of about like sustainability and investing in that kind of like, you know, in better brands, which I hope to get to at some point in my life. But right now I just like am not emotionally or financially at like the $300 skirt level.
Yeah, so, but
it's kind of just like, if you know what you're looking for, you can actually find it at H&M and at like Uniqlo and, you know, Gap, if you look with these sort of like parameters in mind.
Well, and I think also what you're showing is, just because something is inexpensive, it doesn't mean that you have to go overboard. Like you're saying, I just find these things that I like, and I'm buying a few things, and I wear them all the time, which is different than I go to H&M every week and I just buy a bunch of shit.
Yeah, completely. Because I just don't like shopping, so I don't really go to H&M. And it's weird because I think I used to, but I've sort of, again, like broken the habit of just like the mindless shopping to like fill something that I needed filled. And now it's just more like I shop for the utility of it. And so I don't have to do it very often. And it's so much easier and more pleasant when I go. But yeah, like I might buy an extra of something if it's on sale and I love it. But like, I don't buy things just because they're on sale, right? Like, it starts with the, like, do I love this? Will I wear this? Okay, great. I will buy one. Maybe I'll buy two if it's like the most amazing thing. Or like, if I buy something from J. Crew and then they put it on sale, I might buy like two more because I know at that point that I love it. But yeah, it just is a very like sort of slow and methodical approach versus just like, give me a huge haul.
Totally. Do you ever feel, as you observe fashion, like say you bought two of something or there's something that you love that you wear every day, do you ever worry that it's going out of style or that you're not on trend for the season? Does that factor into your consideration, or for you, is it really about like comfort in what you are wearing every day?
It doesn't, because I think like I kind of evolve each season a tiny bit. Like there will always kind of be like one or two new things I add and another couple things will have worn out. So I'll kind of like rotate a new pieces in each season to kind of help with that. But I think also my personal style isn't very like aligned to trends. So it's a little bit easier for it to last from season to season. But I do think with like, I'm trying to think of like a skirt or something to that effect. Like, yeah, like a white dress over time might change in style, but it's not going to change so dramatically from season to season that like last year's dress is going to look dumb or weird, you know. Like even if it did, I probably wouldn't care, but I think that like the styles that I am drawn to are sort of like a crew neck sweater is pretty hard to like look dated, right? Like it's not gonna look dated in a year, most likely.
For people who have not yet read your article and seen how you dress, how would you describe your style and what are some of the key pieces that you've found work the best for you?
So it's very kind of like sporty and all American to some degree. The core piece is white jeans, which again just kind of like happened, but now I like love them and they've kind of become the signature item. But they just like make me feel like happy and pulled together. And I think they make jeans and a sweatshirt look polished in a way that like it's kind of, again, it feels kind of like a trick. So on any given day, I'm probably wearing white jeans and then the majority of the year, either like a crew neck sweater or a crew neck sweatshirt that's in a pastel color, usually like pale pink, pale blue, gray, kind of like a beige, all those kind of like millennial pink and pastels are extremely my shit right now. So that's the basics of it. And then in the summer, it's a lot of white sundresses. So like a white midi dress, a white regular sundress. I have like four that it's like there's one from Gap and one from J. Crew, and I just keep rotating them. I have two of each, if that makes sense. And so, yeah, it's like kind of like, it's a little bit modest. It's a little bit like, it's not very New York either. Like I'm from the Midwest and then I lived in Texas and my style like really reflects that a lot more than I think it reflects New York. So yeah, just kind of clean, bright, like, I guess like quote unquote femme, but I don't know, just very simple. It's honestly pretty basic. Like jeans and sweatshirts aren't fashionable, right? Like that's not interesting, or like, you know, like a jeans and like a cable knit sweater is not groundbreaking, but I think like when you do it with intention, it can look more stylish than it is.
I also love that your palette is pastels. When I was reading the article, I was like, it's never even dawned on me to wear a pastel. It was just cool.
It was funny. Cool
to see somebody else's, just what you were drawn to color-wise and what you feel comfortable in. Because it was cool. I liked that moment.
Yeah, I think it was funny. The bulk of the comments were like, I would never wear pastels, but like, good for you. There were other things mixed in it, but like that was every comment like led with, like, I could never wear these colors or I never would. Which I didn't, again, realize that they were sort of that unusual, but I'm realizing now that like, yeah, like most people do wear brights and patterns and prints and I just don't. So I do think that also has helped it kind of come together as a style because it is a bit unusual to wear pastels sort of extensively. Like most people don't really do that actually. So I think that is part of why it looks sort of more stylish than it is, because it's so specific and kind of unique, but I'm hesitant to use that word because like wearing pink isn't new, right?
You touch on this a little bit in the article, but I'd love for you to discuss it here. You also talk about how, as a woman of color, you kind of see your dress code, like, you didn't set out for it to be quote unquote non-threatening, but you see it as non-threatening now. And I'm wondering if you can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, like I said, I didn't set out to do that. Like, I do genuinely just love those things. And I love pastels, and they do feel very me and very right. But I think that the way we dress tells a story, and that's true of everyone. And I think people of color know that the way they dress or do their hair or do their makeup, like, that's part of the story. And we all make choices and, like, negotiations or not. But, like, there's a choice there, I think, a lot of times of, like, is this going to help me? Is this going to hurt me? It helps me that my choices are also very, very polished, very sort of calm, you know, like, there's a, the whole, I think if you read the article or if people have read it, like, you see the overall picture of these clothes, like, I'm dressing like a, you know, a suburban housewife to some degree, like, from the 80s. So there's a sense there of, like, you know, that doesn't hurt, right? Like, that's sort of a bonus with this style, is that, like, it's, and I mean, it's sort of that, like, Olivia Pope look of, like, the all white, like, there's sort of something to that. But I think the flip of that is it's also, like, people of color, and especially women of color, especially, like, Black women, like, wear white in this really, like, great way. So for me, it's kind of like both, like, a call to that, but also a way of, like, just, like, you know, smoothing the edges so that when I am sort of angry or, you know, worked up or really firm about something at work, like, again, I think that the overall vibe is a little bit, like, less aggressive or perceived as less aggressive than it might be otherwise, which is, I don't have any proof, I don't know, but, like, these are the choices that we make, and I don't think it hurts. Like, it's an easy choice for me to make because it falls within my personal style, and I'd rather make that than, like, risk it, I guess. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Well, I have been inspired by you to also think about this not as a uniform, as a dress code, because I think I've been trying to sort of develop a quote unquote uniform, and I had been failing, because it felt too restrictive. So I love this kind of reformulating it as a dress code.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even I try to develop a uniform, and that is just, like, a high bar, like, yeah, that, to find something you love enough to wear every single day. Like, if you find it, by all means, go for it. But, like, that's just can be hard to do. And also, like, to me, it's nice to have a little bit of flexibility within, like, you know, shorts versus a skirt or whatever. Like, you, to me, I want a little bit of some options in there. So it's, like, the perfect middle ground for me.
Totally. I'd love to move on to another topic that you also recently wrote about for BuzzFeed, which is your heart song journal. Yeah. And in the piece, you say that it's a special notebook separate from your day-to-day journal/diary/notebook where you can write the meaningful things that are really close to your heart and that you want to reference again and again. I just thought that was such a lovely description, and the piece is really great, and I'd love to hear more about this. Like, tell our listeners what this Heart Song Journal is and how you've kind of been making it work for you.
Okay, cool. So I started it, like, kind of out of necessity. I would find myself going, so I start a new journal every 3 months, like my core journal, where I, like, which is what I use as my, like, day-to-day to-do list, where I do kind of, like, all my planning, it's my diary, it's everything. I would find myself going to old ones to pull out and, like, remember, like, a quote, or, I mean, the truth is, it started out of, like, the descriptions I wrote out of all of my different crystals, and, like, they were in one journal, and so whenever I wanted to, like, remember all of the things that, like, blue lace agate was, you know, sort of symbolized, I had to go, like, pull this journal and find it. And I was like, oh, what if I put all of these things, like, in one journal that I just kept at home, and then I could just look at that and wouldn't have to, like, transfer them every, like, I don't want to rewrite that stuff every time I start a new journal, and I don't need to have it with me, like, every single day, but I want it kind of in one core place. It's like having, you know, just like that folder where you keep all of your favorite images or something like that. Like, you just want to know where it is. So it started out of that. And then I wrote out, like, the crystals, and I did a, like, deep dive on my natal chart. I had that like I ordered that through Susan Miller's website, which is the most amazing use of $60 I can recommend. So I like wrote all that in there too, because that was one of those things too, where like you get talking with friends about your natal chart, and I would be like, what is my moon again? And so I wanted to like have it in one place to remember what it was and sort of what it means to have a moon in Taurus. So that went in there. And then I can't remember all the things I added to it at first, but it's been a very slow burn. It's just kind of like, you know, when it's time to add something to it. Like if there's something that I want to reference on more than one occasion, I can kind of like, I'm like, okay, now it's time to move it into the Heart Song journal. So it'll be there. So it's like the quote that I would put in every single journal on the first page, like that goes in there, or like a poem that just like you read it and you're just like, oh my God, like this just like has moved me in a really special way. So it's like those kinds of things. It's just like, it's like an encyclopedia of you, like the things that it's a reference book that you can just always go back to, but it also is like a document that will become this diary of a really specific time in your life too. And there's no like end date. You could do one a year. I've had mine for like more than a year now. I think you know when it's like time to move on and those things don't feel relevant anymore. But yeah, that's the idea of just like putting all of your stuff in one like lovely place and kind of making it feel special. Like I chose a really lovely notebook for it that I just like had. That was the other thing was too, is like I loved these notebooks and I really wanted one and I had nothing to do with it. Like it was too impractical to use for my daily notebook. It's like $16. It's only 100 pages. Like I'm not going to use that every single day because I needed something more like robust for my everyday notebook. So I'm like, what do I do with this notebook? And like this was the perfect thing to do with it because the notebook itself just makes me feel so happy and like brings me so much joy. So to make it this sort of like special little spell book, like that's a perfect use of it. So it was the kind of marrying those two things together too.
When do you in like your overall journaling experience, that sounds like a really spiritual, healing, important part of your day to day. Could you just kind of talk about how you make time for that, for both your Heart Song journal and your everyday journal in your life? Like, what is that time for you? How do you kind of carve it out? Is it very deliberate? Do you sit down? Is it very special for you? Or is it something you kind of rush and do at any different time of the day?
Well, that's a good question. Okay, so my main journal, I mostly sort of do the like main work on it at night. So like every night I will like at the bottom of the day that I've been working on, I'll write like a diary entry and then I start a new page, write like the next day's date at the top and like write my to-do list for the next day, like as far as I know it. And then like that page sits open on my desk all day at work. Like that's like what I'm working from all day long. So I'm like adding to it, crossing things off. So like that experience isn't particularly like spiritual. Like I enjoy it and it's really, but it's very functional. It's functional first. And then like, so I'll finish like today, tonight I'll finish, you know, I'll finish up the to-do list items and then I'll like start the diary page and that kind of thing. So the evening part of it is very much like a ritual. Or not, ritual's a bit too strong of a word. It's a routine, but it's like a very, very nice routine. It's like, I think to some people, like their skincare is like this really like special thing. To me, the journaling is that, where it's like, this is just like my time. I'm not on my phone. Isn't like I'm doing this thing before bed to kind of unwind and that sort of thing. And then I also update it once a month. So that is like, again, it's like a slightly more elevated routine where like I'll sit down and like one of the things that I've been doing recently is making a recap page. So I have like two columns and on the left it's just kind of like May events and then on the right it's like May purchases. So I just like go back through the previous month and like write down all the like mildly important things that happened in May. Like, so I don't think I saw any movies in May, but like one I would write down like saw Black Panther or like, you know, like, you know, Beyonce's like Coachella appearance or like things like that, that were like significant and cool and special, but it also might be like publish this piece at work or like, you know, we had reviews or something like that. So just kind of like, just like stuff that happened that was noteworthy. And then on the purchases side, I usually go through my Amazon history. Cause that's usually where I'm purchasing from. But I may like go through my Gmail and see if there's anything in there. But for me, it's just like your purchases are like a really interesting way of like, that there's a story in there. So when we're thinking about like keeping a diary, like the things that you bought are interesting and sort of worth recording. So I don't record like everything. It's not like bought new soap and toothpaste, but like I record the ones that feel kind of like unusual or interesting or just like noteworthy. So doing that every month is like more of a like a routine that's cool and I put the time into it and I'm trying to like elevate that and make that more of a like special thing, but I haven't quite gotten there yet. But I do like goal setting and all that kind of thing at the same time. And I just found this really good journal prompt. It's a long story, but basically like I'm going to start like a weekly, like it's just, there's like little prompts you go through. So it's like for mind, body, spirit, and, health, or I'm forgetting something, but like you go through each one and you like answer these like three questions. So I'm going to start doing that weekly to try to like have more of a, like, you know, that experience on a weekly basis, because it's a little bit like, I don't know. I just feel like I could be like doing more there. But the heart song journal, so I was totally updating that, like just whenever I felt like it or was like, I don't know, like not bored, but just like had some time. And I was like, I guess I could do that now. But I've recently started getting a lot more intentional about it. So I like put a calendar invite on my calendar for it, or calendar event on my calendar for it. So like on the 30th of each month or the 31st of each month, I like plan to like sit down and like, you know, like light a candle and like be in my like favorite pajamas and like make do the whole ritual. And like I started kind of keeping a like a running list of things to remember to put in it. So I like I'll tag things in Pocket Heart Song to like remind me to put it in there when the time comes, because otherwise I'd be like, what did I want to put in here this month? Like I don't have anything. And if I don't have anything, then like whatever, I'll just use the time to like do some general monthly reflection and that sort of thing. But I feel like it's nice to just have like this like date with yourself on the calendar that you're just like, tonight's the night that I burn the Diptyque candle. Like that's what,
yes,
this is.
A fancy candle.
Like, because otherwise
out.
I just will never burn them. And I'm just like, well, there's no occasion for it. Like tonight's not the night for that. But now I'm just like, no, tonight has to be. I like made myself burn it the other night because I was like, you can't talk yourself out of it. We're going to do this. So
which Diptyque scent is it?
So I resent the fact that you want me to pronounce any of them, but that's rude. But it is the fig one.
Oh, Philo Kilos or something like
it's
that?
It's like fig year or something. I don't know how you say it, and they don't want me to know how to say it. It's a trap, and I resent it. But it's the fig one. I have the rose one, too, but it's a little too strong for my apartment. It's a little overpowering, but I do love it. It's beautiful, but I went with the fig one this time.
I love this date with yourself.
I do too. I don't I think feel I've like ever
it's
had
it. So
date
worth
with
doing.
Myself.
Yeah.
I live alone, so every day is a date with myself. But like this is like the date night, right? Like this is like the time where you like, you know, put on your, theoretically, like you'd put on your date outfit. Like this is my version of that. But like it's my home clothes, yeah. Date outfit. It's like the nice pajamas, and like maybe I'll do a mask or something.
But it's intentional. Like you, it,
yes,
yeah. It's a set time, and you stick to it. You commit to it, which I feel like is
totally, yeah. And it's like that's, I mean, it's like committing to yourself, right? And like saying like I'm going to show up for myself, but like, you know, with like feeling like I'm moisturized and glowy and like in the mood for this versus like I'm going to do this on Sunday morning like unwashed and that sort of thing. It's more like you're really going to show up for yourself.
And do you go back to your heart song journal throughout the month to kind of, I don't know, do you reference it?
I reference it like as necessary. Like I said, the example of like my natal chart, like when I'm having a conversation with somebody about like natal charts, which happens more than you might think, I will like I'll pull it out then. Or if like I don't really like flip through it, it's more of like if I'm looking for something specific, I will pull it out because I'll know it's there.
Right. Well, should we move on to, again, I feel like we could have talked
could
to, like
talk
we could talk to you for hours.
Yeah.
But there was one other big theme that we did want to touch on, which was, again, a BuzzFeed article that you wrote, and it was being organized is my self-care.
Can we read this quote? Because this, Dory and I both highlighted this. It says, being organized is one of the main ways I practice self-care. A lot of people think of self-care as something that's done in a nail salon or on a massage table once a month. But for me, it's something that can be done frequently. One new Google Calendar event, addition to my to-do list, or auto-pay bill at a time.
I mean, you kind of did just touch on this with your, you know, with your Google Calendar event to have a date with yourself. But, you know, I think we'd love to hear about some other ways that organization serves as your self-care.
Yeah. So I don't really look at myself as like an organized person, like capital P, like that. I wouldn't say that's like, and other people look at me that way, and that's totally fine, but like I would never have like kind of identified myself that way for years. So I'm just like, I don't know, like I just do whatever. But I realized, like, I got stuff done and got myself taken care of. But I realized that, like, being organized is, like, intentionally and thoughtfully is such a gift to myself, because being disorganized feels terrible. Like, sort of similar to that feeling of, like, when you don't like your outfit. Like, when you're running late for something, like, that doesn't feel good. Like, I feel stressed and anxious if I'm, like, disappointing somebody. It's like that moment when you're, like, getting your change and your receipt at the cash register and, like, you can't pack it all up in time, or, like, you're digging through your purse, like, looking for cash, or you're like, I know I have exact change. Like, that feeling, like, that's the feeling I get if I'm disorganized, and, like, I don't want to have that all the time. So it's just more of a, like, oh, what can I do proactively to never feel that way? And that means, like, setting up calendar events and, like, making sure I leave for things on time and, like, all of those things. Like, that's just such a, like, why would I not do that? Because the payoff is so wonderful. So that's kind of, like, the core philosophy of, like, that's to me is, like, true self-care, because you're just making sure that you, like, feel really calm and collected all the time. And as an extension, you're giving that gift then to other people. And it's kind of obvious, because it's the whole, like, oxygen mask on first thing, where, like, if you're calm, you're going to make other people feel more calm. So there's that aspect of it. But it's also, like, when other people are depending on you, like, if like, I manage a bunch of people, if I, like, don't have my shit together, like, that's disrespectful of their time, and it's rude and annoying, and it makes me, like, not a great boss. And if I do that to my friends, it makes me not a great friend. So, like, I think of it now too as, like, it's not just a gift for me, but it's a gift that I give to other people. So, like, even something like going to the doctor, like, I don't know if you've dealt with those people who always have an ailment and will never go to the doctor. And, like, they're just like, I think maybe it's strep, I have to cancel, like, 3 or 4 times a year. And you're just like, how are you a 33-year-old adult? Like, and I'm definitely talking about somebody specific right now. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, we all have those people who are just, like, chaos all the time.
Yeah.
And it's really, really tiring to be friends with those people. And obviously, like, I, you know, this is said in good faith. Like, I'm not talking about people who have, like, good reasons for it, or who are making, like, that genuine good faith effort and, like, things go wrong. It's not about that. It's about the people who have the means and sort of the time, but don't have the boundaries and, like, won't make the boundaries. And so they're just constantly all over the place because they're trying to make everybody else happy. And so they're just, like, they're canceling on you because they think maybe it's strep, because they went out last weekend, because they, like, wouldn't say to their friends, hey, I think I'm getting sick, I'm going to stay home. And so to me, like, this, the self-care is actually setting boundaries for yourself that then lead you to be able to, like, relax and literally take care of yourself. Like, I'm going to say no to this thing because I think I'm coming down with something, or, like, I'm going to say no to this thing because I need to get sleep, or whatever. So yeah, I don't know. To me, that's, like, that's sort of, like, my core philosophy of, like, that's how you take care of yourself and the people around you, is to, like, make time for it and get ahead of it. Like, make a to-do list, like, really, like, have an actual to-do list, whether it's an app or pen and paper, but, like, no, don't just say, like, it's on my to-do list and not actually have a to-do list. Like, that's wild to me that there's people who do that. They're just like, oh yeah, it's on my list. And I'm like, is it though? Like, let me see your list.
I also
it's
think
not just a figure of speech, it's a real thing.
You also, I love that you put auto paying your bills, because I do think it's not financial security, but maybe financial responsibility is a huge part of self-care. It's not
totally
that you have to have your credit card paid off, but it's taking the steps to set up your monthly payment so that you're starting to chip away at it. And I don't think we have touched upon finances that much as part of maintaining self-care and just a self-calm, but I think that's such a huge, huge thing.
Oh, I agree. And this, honestly could be a whole other, like, show about, like, having a financial self-image that is very similar to, like, a body image. Like, how you feel about yourself financially is actually, like, really, really important to your overall self-image, I think. But I would say that, like, the bill thing to me is also kind of a thing about when you're in a partnership, that, like, if one person's responsible for paying this bill or that bill, like, you got to pay the bill, because otherwise your partner's going to be nagging you, like, did you pay the electric bill? Did you pay the electric bill? So, like, to set up an auto pay for the electric bill is a gift to both of you. Like, and also, like, that's your responsibility. Like, don't make them nag you about the bill. Just, like, I don't know, in the year 2018, when we have, like, so many apps and bots, like, your partner should never be at, like, nagging you to do anything. No one should be nagging you to do anything. Like, I shouldn't have to keep reminding anyone to pay a bill. Like, literally, there are millions of ways to get a reminder on the phone that is in your hand all the time. It will tell you to pay the bill or the bill can just be automatically paid. So like, just do that, like do the thing. I'm fun to obviously do the thing. Everybody, please.
Well, if there are listeners who maybe have historically been the flaky friend or the flaky partner, what do you think are the first steps they should take if they want to change?
I think it's probably like sitting with yourself and figuring out like what is actually stopping you from doing this thing. Like if you know that you should pay this bill on time and you don't do it every month, or it's like constantly an issue, like what is it really? Is it that like, is it more like is it more of a function thing where you need a reminder? So like, okay, set up the reminder, like take that time. Is it more like you just like don't care? I think you've got to start with like the unpacking of like what's keeping you from doing these things.
The emotion, sometimes it's emotional. I know
it's totally,
I'm the person who let bills pile up and wouldn't look at them because they caused me such anxiety.
Oh, like going back to that Express credit card, like, yes.
Yeah.
I get that way for a reason. So I think it's like, you have to have that like vulnerability and say like, what is really going on here? And why don't I want to deal with it? Because like, you know, you should do the thing. But I do think a lot of people get into this spot because they can't say no to things, which is again, like sort of cliche, like, you know, you've got to say no to things, but like, no, really, like you have to say no to things. You can't just do everything. And my quote unquote, like flakiest friends are just people who are genuinely just trying to make everybody happy. Mm-hmm. And so they're sort of making no one happy because it's like, they're just like, oh, I'm going to like fly this place this weekend. I'm going to fly this place next weekend. And I'm going to totally do that. And it'll be fine. I won't get sick, even though like I go out every night. Like it's just like, no, you're gonna get sick. Like, what do you actually want to do? Like, do you want to travel for this bachelorette party this weekend or don't you? Like, then don't go if you don't want to go, or if it's gonna make you too sick to hang out with the friends that you really care about. Like, sit down and figure out what your priorities are and then like work backwards. But that's also like hard to do, right? Like, to figure out what your priorities are and to like admit that you can't do everything. But you can't do everything, and you're not fooling anyone either. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not working probably.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I have this is a bit of a terrible segue, but I first came to you as a person who I feel like really was at the forefront of bullet journaling and keeping a planner and a to-do list and making it, you make it look beautiful, but also you make it really approachable. But I do think a lot of people feel intimidated by the concept of journaling, keeping a to-do list, keeping a planner. If I'm not, you know, I'm not artistic and I can't like write March in a beautiful way, then I'm not going to do it. Could you just kind of talk about, if somebody is wanting to do it but feeling intimidated, what's a very easy, I mean, one, you wrote a whole book about it, which I've downloaded and I cannot wait to start reading. But what would be like the first few steps for people who want to kind of keep a planner, keep a journal, but might be feeling like it's not for them or they can't do it?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you genuinely want to do it, then, because there might just be that you don't, and that's fine too. Like, the person you think you need to be keeps a journal, but you don't, and that's totally fine. But if you really want to give it an honest try, I would say, like, limit yourself right out of the gate. So what I did was, like, when I first started, I was like, you can use like one colorful pen, and that is it.
Oh.
And if that, it may have been none, I can't even remember now. It was either one or none, and it was like, that's, and you can't do any fancy spreads. You can use like the basic spreads. that's all you get for the first month.
Oh, you just like changed my life.
I wish you could see Kate's face right now.
Only one colorful pen. I thought about, have you seen my bag
of
pens?
Yes, I have. I was thinking about it as she said that.
Rachel, I have a big bag of pens.
I
so
love
simplifying
pens.
Is a good start.
It's just like you have to give yourself the rule of like, it's, I mean, it's very similar actually when you think about it to the whole dress code thing. It's just like you're going to stick with one thing for a little while and see how it feels. And so my thing was like, if you do this for like 21 days or 30 days, once you prove that you can stick with the concept and you've made it part of your routine, then you can start adding on. But I knew that if I just went all in, I would just spend like $30 on pens. I'm like, I don't even know if I like this thing. So it's like, okay, let's back up and just start really simple. And so it's like you get your one color pen. So maybe you write like March in a pretty color, but like that's all you get until you kind of have proven the concept. So that's where I would recommend people start, is just like really, really basic. Don't let yourself go down the rabbit hole. Like you can see what's out there, but then like strip it back to the most basic things. And if you find yourself like losing steam, like strip it back even further. Like, is it that you can't update, or like you can't draw a new thing every day? Like you need something that you update, that you kind of draw once a week and then fill in each day. Like really, really like nail down like what will work for you. Like it should be serving you. Like you should not be like, you're not beholden to some like journal police that tell you how to do it. Like the journal's got to work for you, or you just like, what's the point? Like you could buy a $30 planner that tells you what to do if you wanted that. Like you get to make it as you go. And so you should be making something that like feels really useful.
Do you have
that's my biggest advice.
Do you have any advice for the people out there who have a stack of 40 notebooks and they just keep buying more notebooks and more planners and more pens and don't actually ever
asking for a friend, Kate?
Asking for a friend whose name is me?
I mean, I have my first reaction is sort of like, stop doing that. Like, but, you know what I mean? But the other reaction is just like, well, I don't know, if you can afford to keep buying those pens and journals and like and having them like makes you happy, then like, fine. Like, I don't really care. Like, I have journals that I will probably never use, and I'm okay with that because like, they're beautiful and they make me happy to like look at them and have the sort of feeling of like possibility, and that's okay.
Mm.
But the flip of that is like, also like, you know, be financially responsible. Like, don't keep buying stuff you're never going to use. If like, if you're buying it because you're telling yourself you're going to use it and like, you're going to be that person, then like, that's probably not a healthy relationship with it. So like, I think it's kind of figuring out where you fall. But I'm okay with having like some just like beautiful objects that like, you know, like that's their purpose, right? Is to like be beautiful and inspiring. Like, that's okay. That's a good purpose, to just be lovely. But also just use them, like make the heart song journal, or like find ways to use them if you can.
Oh, well,
I
got a lot of plans this summer.
Yeah.
I got to set my dates with myself.
I mean, I think this is a great note to end
on. Rachel, thank you so much.
Rachel,
thank you so much for having me.
This was amazing. Where can people find you?
So the easiest, like kind of core place is my blog, which you guys can probably link to, but it's therewm.com, the room, REWM. And that has links kind of to everything else. But my Twitter and Instagram are the_room, therewm. And on BuzzFeed, it's buzzfeed.com/RachelWMiller.
Great. Yeah, we will link to all of this. But thank you again. It was so great to talk to you, and I feel inspired.
I do too.
I'm so glad. Thank you. This was a pleasure. Yeah. I love your podcast. This was great.
Thank you.
Okay. Take care, Rachel.
You too.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Kate, last week your intention was to try and enjoy your vacation. How'd you do?
I'm pretty proud of myself. I did it.
Nice.
I slowed down. I tried to be really intentional with my time. I mean, I'm saying this. I also got really into playing a game that I saw teens playing on our airplane called Helix Jump.
Oh.
I've never played a game on my phone before.
Oh.
But
you weren't into Farmville?
Nope. Never did that. Never did Candy Crush. I did get into that Kim Kardashian game. So it's not like I was writing poetry the whole trip. I was,
sure,
you know, screwing around. But I tried to just slow down. I didn't try to cram too much stuff in. I just wanted my daughters to have a really kind of relaxing, family-focused time romping around the woods of New Hampshire.
Some good, clean fun.
You know, I can recognize how special it is that we get to go do that every year, that you know, my family lives in the country, and it's an experience that not everybody gets to have. And so I just tried to focus on that and have a really good time. And I also watched some great stuff on Netflix.
Oh, great.
Nanette,
Set It Up. I need to watch that. I watched Set It Up too.
Queer Eye Season 2.
Me too.
Nailed it. Oh,
yeah.
So much good stuff. Anyway, so I did it, Dory. Now, did you do the dishes?
Well, I have a great, I have what I think is a great story.
Okay.
That I'm going to tell you right now.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
So my husband has been trying to get back in shape, and he's been working out. He's been going to the gym very early in the morning. So he's been going to the gym at like 5:30 in the morning. Now, I have also been waking up very early because his alarm goes off. I try to go back to sleep. I can't go back to sleep. So one day, a few days ago, last week, he woke up. I finally woke up. The kitchen was like a disaster. Like I had cooked dinner. Like there was just,
and you had left the dishes.
I had left the dishes, okay. Of course, because you know I'm horrible. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to do the dishes. I'm going to clean the kitchen. And when Matt comes home, he's not going to know what hit him.
I'm so excited to hear where this goes.
So I cleaned the shit out of that kitchen.
And this is at 5:30 in the morning?
This is at like 6 a.m.
Okay. Oh, which is really funny because I've noticed I've been getting emails from you at like 6:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And and we've talked about your wake up time, uh-huh. which is later than that. Okay. Yeah. This is great.
But this is when I wake up now. Okay. So I cleaned the whole kitchen and then I'm just like hanging out in the living room and Matt gets home and he walks into the kitchen and he's like, where's my wife? What happened? Who did this?
And you were like, I'm right here, mother.
I could not believe it. And I was like, on a scale of 1 to 10, how surprised were you when you walked in and saw the clean kitchen? And he was like, a 10.
Oh, yeah.
He was like, I couldn't believe it. And I was like, I did that because I said on Forever 35 that that was one of my intentions. So, you know, he's starting to see how this podcast can really benefit him.
Finally. And now this was one time, or have you been getting up now early and doing the kitchen every morning?
Well, I've been away.
Not that one time isn't great.
Yeah. So that was actually
That's
right.
Amazing.
That was like a day or two before I left. And I don't think we cooked that much, like before I went on vacation, not vacation, before I went to visit
family
my sister.
Visit.
Yeah. And I just got back yesterday. So there hasn't been that much. But yeah, I was like, all right, I can do this.
And was it less painful than you imagine?
Like
it
actually
takes less time than you think it's gonna take if you just do it. It's so hard.
Kate, it's like anything like that. The thing that you always put off is never as bad. I will say that reorganizing my office was a chore.
But you did it.
But I did it. So
congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
And also congratulations to Matt, who's benefiting from the intentions we set on this podcast.
Indeed. What is your intention for next week?
Well, I feel like I've set this intention like 50 times on this podcast and I never stick to it and I make up excuses as to why I don't. And so here goes this week's intention, a strict bedtime.
Ooh.
I need to be in bed at 11.
Okay.
I need to be. And I'll say that and then I'm like, well, actually, I need lights out by midnight. Like, I make excuses. I really do think I should be lights out at 11.
What time does Anthony go to bed?
Between 11:30 and 12.
Okay.
Or maybe earlier. He kind of just depends on how he's feeling.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that with my children, I'm always like, you need to be in bed on time. I can see that you're tired and you need to get all the sleep. And blah, 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 blah. And then I don't practice it. And I'm much kinder, happier, better functioning when I get sleep.
Yeah.
Gosh, darn it. And I also wake up earlier if I go to bed. Like I wake up at naturally at like 6:15 instead of like flailing out of bed at 7 like a lunatic. So anyway, I gotta really try to stick to it.
Okay.
It's gonna be hard again because I want to remind you I'm now addicted to a game called Helix Jump. Which
we have the teens to thank for that.
Thank you, teens. I sat next to on an airplane and then Googled game with ball. Now I play it. Okay, I like yours. It's one word, but it's a big one.
Yeah. So my intention for next week is budgeting. Now look, let's not go overboard. I'm not going to suddenly become like Suze Orman here.
Susie Orman?
Susie? Suze? I thought her name was Suze.
Well, it's spelled Suze, but I believe it's pronounced Susie.
Okay, see, I don't even know her name.
That's all right. You've seen it in print.
I have.
You've never seen her on Oprah? No judgment.
Anyway, we're financially in a little bit of a pickle at the moment. And so we need to kind of like scale it back. And so I'm trying to figure out what that looks like.
Do you use any sort of like app or software for budgeting? Mm-mm. We use Mint and we have for years. Mm-hmm. And I will say that Anthony, my husband, is way disciplined with it. Mm-hmm. I am not. I just have it on my phone and make mm-hmm. sure I don't go over stuff. But every weekend he sits and does the bills and looks at the budget and makes sure everything is checked out. I mean, now that again is
that will never happen in my house.
But maybe finding a program.
We're talking baby steps.
Okay,
so what real baby steps?
What do you think could be the first baby step? Like, what is that when it comes to budgeting?
I think it is really looking at what we spend. I think that's the first step.
Does money give you major anxiety? It gives me like a panic attack just thinking about it. Like looking at everything, like laying it all out, like that is really hard.
Of course. I mean, I never do it.
Yeah.
But I think we have to do it.
That's a really big one. I admire that you're taking it on.
I mean, we'll see what happens.
You can do it. Even just opening your checking account and just looking at what you've spent in the month and taking note of it can be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, that's hard.
So that's happening.
Maybe a listener might have a good budget baby step recommendation.
Baby step. I don't need a recommendation for you need a budget. I know it's a great app. I'm not there yet.
I've never heard that.
It's big in the Forever 35 money group.
Oh, hey guys.
YNAB. People really like it. I'm not ready for
it. You're not ready for any app.
I'm not. Yeah. We're talking like 101 here.
Okay.
001. We're talking like remedial summer course.
I think just saying like, I'm going to think about this is an awesome first step.
Thank you,
apologize
Kate.
For recommending an app.
Oh, no. I've tried to use Mint before.
Yeah, but it doesn't work for you. Yeah.
First of all, it didn't connect to all my bank accounts right.
God damn it.
And it just like, I don't know. It just didn't work. Anyway, please call us and let us know about budgeting or anything else at 781-591-0390. You can also email us at forever35podcast@gmail.com. And we have plugged the Facebook group a lot, but that is because it is the best group on Facebook. It is facebook.com/group/forever35podcast.
You know, tell that to the Trader Joe's recipes group I'm in, Dory. They might be offended.
Well, I can't help that.
I'm kidding. Our Facebook group is the best. You can also follow us on Instagram at Forever 35 Podcast, Twitter, Forever 35 Pod. And products and things we mention are always up on our website, as well as a little update on every episode at forever35podcast.com.
And if you feel it in your heart to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, we will not be mad.
We'll be glad.
We will be very glad. So please do that.
And as always, thank you so much for listening and reaching out to us. We really appreciate it. And on that note,
Forever 35 is hosted and produced by Kate Spencer and Dori Shafrir, and produced and edited by Sammy Junio.
The best.
And we will see you next week.